This is the DJ Spider Podcast, presented by BeatSource.
Welcome to the DJ Spider Podcast, presented by BeatSource. Today we have someone special in the house. She came up in Miami, but now she's in LA killing it. She's close with the legend Claude Von Stroke and Dirty Bird Records. She now has her own label called Me Domina.
Yeah.
And has been steady releasing dope originals and remixes and touring. She gained huge momentum with her viral Me, Me, Me track, and has co-signs from some of the biggest names in dance music, not to mention she's one of the few people picked for the Beatport Next 2024. So please welcome to the show, Nala.
Woo!
Let's go! Everyone on the street. yes. So give people that don't know about you a little idea, you know, of what's happening. And I'm sure you have a lot of fans that are listening that do know about you, but
yeah. Well, I am, originally from LA, like we spoke about earlier. But so I'm from LA, went to college in Miami, picked up DJing, as a result of just kind of like the lack of a college scene, I guess, in Miami, going to university there. And then, started out as a promoter, then became a DJ, then became a producer, and spent the like last part of the last 9 years, 10 years, just like kind of honing it in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, now I'm at a point where I'm like, I've got a like good amount of releases under my belt and a lot of co-signs from labels and other artists. And now I'm like touring properly, consistently. I actually haven't had a break since November.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great, though. Congrats.
it's been fun.
That's, I mean, we'll break down that whole timeline, you know, because all of it plays into probably who you are and who you are musically and as a person and as a DJ and producer. I was telling you earlier, your Twitter is pretty good. I follow it. You're very good at tweeting and having your specific takes, which are usually funny and, you know, pointed. but I love reading them. And I saw you put like this timeline. There was like, it was like a trend, right? People were all doing it. And you put 2015, college girl and local Miami DJ. 2016, broke local DJ in LA. 2017, broke local DJ and weed trimmer. 2018, local DJ and tech girl. 2019, broke local DJ, just straight up. 2020, Dirty Bird. 2021, Dirty Bird. 2022, Dirty Bird, Black Book. 2023, is that DIY Namic?
Dynamic.
Dynamic. Okay. Sorry if I don't know about that.
Oh,
we'll learn about it. And then 2024, nonstop touring DJ. So that's, that's the ladder, the journey. You know,
it sums it up succinctly. It's kind of like one of those things where, there's so many more moving parts to it.
Right.
But it kind of really, that's how it was. Like, I was a local DJ and I was doing a lot in Miami while I was in college.
Yeah.
But I kind of recognized as soon as I graduated that if I was going to become a better producer and a better artist, I had to come back to LA and learn from the amount, there's so many producers here to learn from.
Yeah,
whereas I felt kind of limited in Miami. So I moved back here and basically just had to start over rebuilding my relationships. And at that time when I was a broke local DJ, I was open format. I was, taking any gig I could get, just really trying to do anything. So I'm very familiar with the open format lifestyle. I did it. It was fine. And I survived, but at the same time I had to definitely pick up a lot of different side hustles. And so that's when I became a weed trimmer because it paid well. And I had a lot of friends within that space. And then I was also doing brand ambassador gigs. Basically, I kind of refused at that point to take on any real job. I had a degree in advertising, but I was I don't want to take a 9-to-5 and then it detracts from the fire that makes me, work really hard to be a DJ.
Yeah.
I was that. And then I got this random gig for a game show app where I was making music quizzes.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it, the app?
Oh, gosh.
HQ? No.
It was similar to HQ. Oh, my gosh. I forgot the name, honestly.
That was like such a huge thing in the pandemic, HQ, right? Or was it before?
It was before. So HQ and this game show were like right before the pandemic, and they both like died right before the pandemic, which would have been amazing to have during the pandemic.
I know, right.
But long story short, I like ended up doing that for like about a year and a half. And it was great because it was work from home.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like they paid for all the music I bought. So I bought like 14,000 open format, all genre songs. I have like the most extensive collection of like open format music on my like really old laptop. And what's really funny is that like now I have it, and I gave it to a friend who's like doing some small local gigs here and there in the open format space.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God, this is so awesome. I'm crushing this now. I'm like, yeah, you're welcome. But yeah, so I was doing that, and then the company closed in 2019, and I was like, well, okay, I'm looking at my career, and I'm like, I'm making music, and it was like very indie, down-tempo, experimental, but I was like, I'm not really getting anywhere.
Yeah.
And so that was when I was like, I just have to sign to like a label. That's the only thing that's going to change my career at this point. So I kind of looked around. I was like already doing like underground raves in Los Angeles at that point. I really like electronic music. It's kind of like my whole history of dance music. I've always liked it, and was participating in it. And I like just by chance was living with someone who worked with Claude Von Stroke, and he was looking to sign more female artists. And I had a meeting with him, and next thing you know, I basically like got managed by him and spent the better part of 2020 just like learning how to make better electronic music for the club.
Right.
And I had like my live stream TV show on their channel, and like it was like a whole, I call it like Claude Von Stroke's like school of DJ, like, you know, professional DJing. And so I kind of he like coached me, and I took all this like songwriting and production ability that I had prior that I spent doing things that weren't really designed for the club, and started learning how to do it for the club. And then from there just kept growing. So now I'm like releasing on other labels and so on and so forth.
Right. And you're still cool with them and
Yeah. So in 2022, at the end of 2022, Claude was basically just kind of like, okay, I got you to like this point where you probably need like an actual real manager now. Like, I'm not going to spend like all my time managing. Like, that's not what I want to do.
Right.
And I was like, no, super cool. Stoked. Thank you so much. You are the best. And I'm still very close with him. And so I ended up getting managed by Red Light Management.
Oh, great.
In a roundabout way. So, yeah. So now I'm with Red Light. And I spent the better part of last year. I think this was like the hard part of last year, because like I got passed to Red Light, and I was so used to having like Claude Von Stroke as my sounding board.
Right.
So I had to like readapt, especially like on a production standpoint and like a sonic like direction standpoint. I was like, okay, I'm on my own. Like, it's like a little bird getting pushed out of a nest. I was like, okay, all right, I have to fly on my own and figure this out. And I was definitely bittersweet for the first few months. And then now I'm like, oh no, this is great. Like, yeah. This was such a good idea. And yeah, we still chat to this day. And if I need like help with like a mix down, he'll be a good ear for me, but that's about it. Yeah.
That's incredible. And when you were doing the open format thing, and then you made the transition or something, did you have to take a step back from the gigs, or were you just like...
Okay, so I got really... This is like not... I don't know. I got really lucky because the pandemic hit, and it was like a break. So I went from having like a bunch of like, you know, really like low paying local hotel gigs and stuff like
right.
that. And that break kind of created a separation.
Yes.
So like a lot of people will say, don't take like, if you want to be an artist, don't take local gigs, because then you'll get stuck there. You'll never get valued, yada, yada. And I was like, well, I'm not going to work a real job, so I'm going to take these gigs because it pays better than if I was working 9 to 5.
Yeah, so. And it goes into your skill set and your passion at the same
time.
Right.
And in a really interesting way, it kind of like built a positive reputation for me, because people were like, rooting for the underdog.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we never get to see a local DJ that then breaks through, you know?
Right.
So I got lucky in that way, but I did have also the benefit of a year where no one was DJing. So when gigs came back, I was like, oh, well, now I'm up here.
Yes.
I'm doing different things now.
Right.
But yeah, it was like a unique circumstance.
Right. That, yeah. In a way, that's how the pandemic did help some people. And I guess Dirty Bird was so active online right away, right? With, their streaming shows and just they seem so organized right away with all the streams. And
they're incredible.
I mean, it's...
Andy Crenshaw, Barkley's wife, Club on Stroke's wife, is a marketing genius. And she's retired now.
Really? Okay.
So I didn't know. Yeah, I know. Well, they sold the company, like the label, to Empire.
Right.
Yeah. So she's living her best life now.
Oh,
I mean,
good.
Years and years of just absolutely crushing it. And now she's getting to enjoy, you know, retirement. So.
Right. But well-deserved, especially someone that I feel like never folded for anything, just stuck to their own vision the whole time, matter what.
It's incredible.
And a very specific vision. I mean, for... What, 30 years? I don't know how long, or 20 something.
Maybe 20?
Yeah, 20 years.
At this point, yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
It's insane. And like, she's iconic. She's definitely one of the best music marketers in the industry. And yeah, I mean, just ready to jump on anything that was about to be popular. Like, there was that one app, the one that was like kind of like a podcast. A panel kind of podcast.
Right. What is, AMP or something?
I don't even remember. Oh my gosh, my memory is like pandemic brain. I don't remember anything. But yeah, like she was just ready to be like on the forefront of anything.
Oh, the Clubhouse.
Clubhouse, yeah. Yes. Yeah, like on the forefront
everyone
of
thought
everything.
That was the future of everything and now it's just gone.
I know. But yeah, so that was kind of like her thing is like she saw that people were switching to Twitch and she was like, okay, time to move there. And yeah, I mean for... That whole year I was on that show and it really did kind of like help a lot. One, it helped give me Richie Panic and some of the other people that we had on the show, like purpose.
Yeah. Right. Something to do.
Yeah. And it was also fun for me because it like really helped me, I guess, as an electronic artist hone in on what I really liked musically.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt kind of trapped being like in the open format and club space, even if I was doing like house music and stuff, I felt like I was trapped playing like what the audience wanted.
Right.
So I think like there has to be a level of like selfishness when you're an artist and doing that like live stream helped because I wasn't really like playing for a club, you know? So that was like really nice and I got to develop my sound a little bit more through that time.
Yeah. And I think people got to get to know you as well and your personality musically and as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just watching you on there. And it's different streaming. It's like more intimate. There's not like some, you know, you're in that chat room. I don't know what it is, but you get to know the DJs or the streamers, you know, everything about them in a way and kind of get connected to them.
Yeah. I still have like fans to this day that know me from those streams and they come to my shows and they're just
great.
Like, you know, TV party. And I'm like, yeah, those were good times, honestly.
Right. That's cool. No, I know. Like even this week, Scratch Bastard, he still streams every week and he throws this big party called Bastard's Barbecue. And he's like, yeah, we get a ton of people from Twitch that just come out to the shows now. So
yeah,
streaming,
I love that.
You know, the pandemic allowed you to change your direction musically and hone in on what you wanted to do and create this new streaming world for DJs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you went through the open format, you kind of had the pandemic and the big change. And now when you DJ, because you were mentioning before, you know, you had to just DJ for the crowd. And that is a big part of open format DJing. And I feel like DJing is fun, but there is a difference if you're able to play your own records or create your own set or people are just coming to see what your creativity, you know, will be with the DJ set. How would you describe your DJ style now?
I think I still incorporate some elements of open format DJing. For instance, like I don't adhere to a specific genre when I play. Like I like to kind of bounce around and weave between things. I played in New York, especially in 3-hour sets. Oh, I like love a 3-hour set because then I can really go from like, okay, we a nice big like banging like Green Velvet song into like a weird trance song.
Right.
And then I pop back up. So it's like this kind of like bobbing and weaving where I'll keep people entertained. Like the people that are maybe newer to dance music, I'll keep them kind of like energized every like 10, 20 minutes by playing things that they're aware of and get them grooving.
Right.
And then I'll like do these like selfish things where I'm like, okay, but now we're going on this like really fun journey here, you know?
Yeah.
So I do still incorporate like open format music in that kind of sense. And I'm also, I think, like really grateful that I had that experience because I'm very receptive to the crowd. So I know that like, if I'm getting too weird, I can bring them back.
Yeah.
But now as an artist, I recognize also that people are there to be taken on that journey and they're kind of more trusting of me. Whereas I feel like, I think maybe as an open format DJ, for the most part, your job is to convince people. You're like, you're going to love this experience no matter what, because I'm going to have to like understand you. I'm doing this for you, you know, whereas that's like true. There's a bit of selfishness with being an artist, I think.
Yeah.
That is kind of nice.
No, that's a good insight into it. And then also the crowds just get bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where you're just DJing to a sea of people. Like,
yes. Yeah,
I saw you
wild.
Doing a show with Dom Dolla recently and you're like
an ant.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're just like, boom, you play it, and like, it looks super dope, and everyone looks into it, but are you even able to gauge a crowd response or any sort of psychology, like, no. I'm doing it for you, or you just go, okay, I got my songs I want to play, and figure it out, and go for it?
Yeah, you know, it's like, I know at this point, like, what songs are big enough to work,
yeah.
that people are going to enjoy, and I just know what I could get away with, but I call those kinds of sets, like, another day on the job, because you're just like... It's like you're not really engaged with the crowd. Like you kind of can see their arms a little bit, you know?
Right.
But yeah, you're just kind of like going based off like some feedback, you know? Yes. It's not as interactive,
right.
I guess.
But they're also there for like a show and they right. want to see what you're going to give them in a way.
Yeah, that was a fun opening for Dom Dolla. First of all, incredible person.
He seems great.
Oh, he's such a great
person. I
mean,
I love his
music
and his DJing, but he seems like a cool
He's one of the person. Nicest people for sure in this industry. But in that same like show, it was just kind of like, I kept calling it to my friends. I'm like, oh, it's like opening up for like Taylor Swift, right? Like people are there yes. to see like the big act and there's all this big production and he's like got this really wonderful show. So it is like kind of a tall glass, you know, yeah. where I'm like, okay, I've got to really like entertain people for this like hour and a half, which it is very different than like if I'm taking people on a 3-hour journey, like I did in New York last Sunday, or like even just like a headline set the night before where it's like, even if it is an hour and a half, like again, people are there to see me,
yeah.
but if they're there to see like superstar,
right.
I have to like, that's definitely when you like chime into that like open format brain
that's
a little,
true.
You know?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I had to do something in Vegas last Sunday and Too Short was like booked as the performer of the night. And I went on and I, you know, I felt the vibe of like, hey, we're having fun, but like, when is he coming on?
Right,
you
yeah.
know, like there's those people that are in the front that like, you know, are just not open to anything. And then people are having a good time, but I could tell. I was like, all right. And I had to dip into like, okay, I should go to like my Bay Area set, you know, or like play like an acapella loop of a Bay Area song into like an E-40 song or something that won't mess him up, but like they'll react, you know? And then I saw them react. I'm like, okay, I'll do a West Coast set and
yeah.
same kind of thing. And like, they're not, I mean, I had to tour the country opening for Blink-182. That was
amazing.
Amazing. And also the pinnacle of, we don't want to see you, when are they coming on, you
oh
know, like
oh, I can only imagine, they're so huge.
Because I mean, first of all, like they asked me to do it and I'm like, what am I gonna do here? And they're like, do your thing, it's gonna be great, we love it. And like, I didn't know, I had never done anything like that, you know? And I'm standing there and it's the people that are in the front row of a concert like that, they've been waiting for 5 years to go, you know?
Yeah.
So they rush to the front, they're standing in the front and they're just like, who are you? I hate you so much, you know? And I'm just like, we're going to be all right, guys. Like, they're not going to be on for another 2.5 hours. So like, let's just make the best of this. You
oh
know?
My
but,
gosh. That's
yeah.
So
I would
funny.
Check Twitter after and definitely would have some positive feedback, but majority people just like, this guy's ruining every song I like. Because also I'm trying to play their music. Like, I had a vision of like what the crowd would be like and what it would be like. And we started in San Diego and just my first set was just pure bomb. Like, it did not go good. And I was like, all right, I need to redo this and play songs that they like. I thought they'd be more into like, I don't know, dubstep. It was like 2016. I'm like, they're probably into that stuff too, but it was not, didn't go good. I like, learned a lot.
Yeah, you kind of like adapt. You like yeah. learn and adapt.
And learn to be on the mic too. You know, it was
yes.
like, that was never fun for me, but I'm like, all right, they're just staring at me. And a lot of these people, it's their first show ever too, especially if it's an all ages show or something. It's like their first time going out. So just like, what's happening? What do I do?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that reminds me. I used to DJ for like hip hop acts sometimes. And I did one for like, oh my God, I don't want to mess his name up. I think it's like Puya or something like that.
Well,
I have no idea.
I can edit it.
I don't even know where my phone is. Anyways, it was like, he's like a really big, like, kind of has like a rockish vibe of a rapper.
Okay.
From Florida.
All right.
I don't actually know if he's still performing. Right. I'm so tapped
Sounds
out of
Sounds familiar. It. Yeah. All good.
But yeah, it was like my first time doing like an open format set for a bigger act like that. And I definitely was like, what am I doing here? Like, first of all, I'm not good at this. Like, yeah. I shouldn't be performing here. But I was like, at that time in my life, I was like very young. I think I was like 24. And I was not good with the mic. So I brought my friend out to be on the mic and she was horrified. It was so bad. Yeah. I mean, at this stage in my career, I'm like so much happier and like I feel much more authentic. I think I was still trying to figure it out back then.
Right. Especially if you're at a hip hop show and you're like, okay, I got to like fit yeah. in with these people and whatever I'm doing.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't really, yeah. I needed those experiences to be where I am now. I'm right. just going to put it that way.
That's the truth, though. I mean, you have to go through people that have just only had it good. Like, you have to go through those hard times and uncomfortable times and bombing and whatever bad
yeah.
things, you know, happen to you. It gives you character, but it also shows how you're going to be able to get back up, get better and learn from it.
Yeah. And now, I mean, I don't mind getting on a mic. I enjoy it. So,
right. I think you've really developed and shown who you are as a person. And I think people are excited to hear you talk on a mic and do your set.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, you sing on a lot of the tracks now.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like your voice is known like that as well.
Yeah. It's like, I'll do like sing over. Most of my tracks are a lot of like me yelling and talking. So
right.
I'll
do
just
you do that live at the show?
I'll do it live. Yeah.
That's dope.
Just write over the songs. It'd be cool to one day like do an actual live performance. That's definitely something that I've thought about doing. I enjoy it. And I just think creatively it'd be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, right now I just sing over my DJ sets.
Well, even, I mean, your music is going in that direction too. Like your new single is not like a traditional dance song, right?
Right.
I don't
really know. Yeah, I call it indie dance, right? So it's like more of an ode to kind of the stuff that I liked when I was growing up, which would be like Bloghouse era stuff, you know?
Yeah, the best. Yeah. I mean, I was listening, like I went through a bunch of your kind of recent remixes and original tracks. And I mean, you're all over the place in a very amazing, good way, you know, like with your influences. Like I was like, oh my God, I kind of hear like Kraftwerk sounds and like 80s electro and not just the standard, you know, four on the floor drums and the type of synth sounds you're using, but then also like punk rock and then even LCD sound system and everything, you know, that
that's really accurate. I think
that like every track I would go through and I was like, oh, even like the more EDM ones, like the what was I listening to? There was one in the car that was really good. This one, the So Alive remix
of
that
Teed.
One's great. Yeah, Teed. Yeah, that one was really good. No, they're all, I think you're able to really show your sound and what your influences are and then put it out there.
Yeah, I think the fun task for me at this point is taking what my influences are and just kind of applying them in different ways.
Yeah.
I really don't feel comfortable getting like cornered into a specific sound.
That's good.
Yeah, I just can't. I don't like to be a purist. I've never been a purist. So even in my DJ sets, even in my production, I like to explore and like be creative and have fun and be novel, you know? Yeah. So yeah, but LCD sound system, punk music.
Yeah, like, Peaches, I heard in there.
Yeah, love Peaches.
Sure.
Icon. And then like 80s like synthesizers and stuff. Those are definitely like some of the more core things. And then whether it's tech house, breaks, whatever, I just kind of apply it in that way.
Yeah, I can hear that. I love it though. You need, all music scenes need people like that to push the things forward that are not copying each other and not afraid to change their DJ set, change their production style, work with different people, you know, and like you're starting to really be on a roll. Like you said, you're touring nonstop, and then you're like, watch this, I'm going to put out a different kind of track.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I was really nervous about releasing that one. And I, like, to the label and my team, I was just like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if anyone's going to like this, you know?
But the response has been good, right?
Yeah.
Really good.
It's been good. And then on top of that, like, a really good thing that I'm doing now with the songs that are not like totally for the club is just remixing them myself and and creating like a club edit. So
of your own song.
Yeah.
Right. I saw you did that too.
Yeah. So I have a club edit coming out of the song I just released probably in a couple weeks.
That's such a good idea though, especially in the age of streaming and the way everything is, because a lot of times you're like, oh, this, you know, whatever, like Martin Solvig track is good. But then either you're listening to some weird radio edit that's a minute and 50 seconds and it just comes in on the singing part with a drum and then it's over, or you listen to some extended 6 minute thing where you're in your car listening to like 2 minutes of a kick drum. But you are actually making a cool song that people can listen to and can be on playlists and can be played in multiple types of venues. And then you make the club song for the DJs that can play.
Yeah, that was kind of like, okay, if I want this song to be applicable in real life,
exactly.
Then I got to make it into a club track. And it was actually like a fun process because then I really got to go even further into like that LCD like bloghouse sound with this one in particular. And I played it this weekend and it was awesome. So I'm
That's
like, okay,
so cool.
I'm ready.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I loved it. I was just listening to all your stuff leading up to this, like, all right, I'm in the zone. And it was really dope. So when you do, you know, I know it's funny, like in the open format world, it's like, there's not so much B2B or people working together or being like, let's, you know, we used to be like on vinyl, I would do a lot of like 4 turntable sets and stuff like that. But with Serato, it just died out. I don't know why, but I feel like with the USB sticks or that it, you know, the EDM or, you know, house DJs are able to like do B2B. So can we get some insight on that? Like, is there any like etiquette or things that are annoying that people do or things that make it easier or things you like or don't like about it?
I think like one of the main things, okay, a couple main things not to do. I was actually just talking about this with someone last weekend, but one is like, do not play a song that changes BPM within the track.
Okay. Yes.
You know, like there was like some 80s track that my agents were actually telling me about where like, from Lil Lewis.
Oh, yeah. And it slows down.
Yes.
And the girl's over it. And then it speeds back up for a kiss or French kiss.
Yeah.
Or
French kiss.
Yeah.
And he was saying like, that's not cool. You know, like you didn't warn me in advance. You didn't warn me in advance. And like, I guess it was like a specific edit where the end of the song also slowed down. So he's like trying to mix in.
There's no way out.
And it's vinyl. So you're like, I don't know what's going on, you know? So yeah, that's like probably something you shouldn't do. Mixing in to a song too quickly without like consulting the person is probably not a nice thing to do either.
Right. Like they just put it on and you're like cutting out the best part.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, can we like wait till the second drop, you know?
Yeah.
What else? And then, yeah, just like generally difficult tracks to mix. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just a lot of like communication and like understanding kind of the energy of each other. And the best kind of back-to-backs are ones where you're kind of on the same page. I did do a back-to-back with someone who was like deciding to like try out all their demos and the audio quality wasn't great. And I was kind of annoyed by that.
Yeah. right. So and the like, crowd might just be like, what are we listening to at this point?
There's no like fluidity, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Right, like do that in your own set maybe.
Yeah. Right. Try out your own songs and like your own set maybe. I don't know.
And it's fun. I feel like to like, even if it's so loud, you can't talk like DJ to DJ, be like, oh, this would be dope to put this song after that or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fun part is kind of being able to really get into tune with someone and just be like, okay, this is where we're going to go with this. And then they're like, oh, that's a good idea. This is where I'm going to go from there. And then it's like this kind of like back and forth.
Right. Like it's like a conversation, even if it's too loud, you're like talking through music, you know, even you could do it with people that don't speak the same language. You're like, that's the way music, you know, helps everyone communicate.
Yeah.
That's cool. Oh, I was going to ask something else about it, but I forgot. That sounds great. Something else that's pretty cool that happened in your life is being chosen for the Beatport Next 2024. So congratulations.
Thank you.
That's huge because it seems like they only chose a few people and it's a year-long program, right?
Yeah, it's a really nice way to get like highlighted on Beatport. Basically, like every release I have is going to just be like front page.
Yeah, that's great.
In the respective genres and stuff like that. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, it's nice to be like acknowledged.
I mean, yeah. Especially after everything you went through, you know, to get to this point right. And like you said, to be different and set yourself apart and then be acknowledged. And
yeah, it's not easy.
Platformed.
I think like sometimes I'm like, oh gosh, my life would have been so much easier if I could just do what's like stick to a specific genre and do right. it. And then like, you know, I don't know. I guess it would have been easier if I did like the more traditional path. But I like to make my life complicated. So
I think, you know, that's good. So do I. I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
Difficulty level 10. Yeah. Yeah. I will always do that to myself. I don't know why. I show up at the gig like, why did I decide to try to pull off this set? But, yeah, I feel like it's the creativity, you know.
Yeah, it's good to challenge yourself.
Exactly.
And also, I'm not good at mimicking other people. You know, I'm bad at it. Like, I'm really bad at trying to copy what's popular.
Right.
So I might as well just stick to what I'm good at, which is just being myself.
Yes.
So that's kind of been my attitude towards it.
That's cool. And so when you first started, like, you were telling me that you were going out, like, very young in Miami. How were you going out so young, or what were the parties you were going to, and who were your musical influences at that time that got you into the scene?
So I went to my first rave ever when I was like, it was on my 15th birthday.
Okay.
And it was at a club. It was called Club Exit. It was in Hollywood, all age rave. And I don't know, there was like a progressive house room, the main one. And then there was like a small drum and bass room. And like,
it was pretty
weird. Like in terms of just like, there wasn't that many people that were there, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, once I experienced that, I went back to high school and I was like, okay guys, I have found the coolest thing ever. And, so I started like inviting all these people to come out to these like all age raves. And then all of a sudden it exploded in popularity because of course, like, these are like high schoolers that are like, oh my God, here's like a place where I can party.
Right.
And no one is watching.
Yeah.
And there's no like, you know, parents telling us or cops shutting down parties or anything like that. So it blew up. And then it kind of coincided at the same time with like the Steve Aoki wave and the Bloody Beetroots rave. And,
okay.
And like, so.
So it was like late 2000, like 2000.
Like 10.
Or 10 or yeah.
Yeah, it was 10, 11. No, 9, 10, 11.
Right. Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah, 9, 10, 11. That was
yeah, because Banana Split probably started like, I don't know, 2007 or 2008. And then just, and Aoki and AM were doing it. And then that's when Aoki really started to.
Yeah. So there was like.
Get huge.
There was this club in Fort Lauderdale called Club Cinema. And I don't even know if it's still open, but they just used to have all these like, then it became massive, right? So like all of these like underage kids are going to these like massive, like this place was like an old movie theater turned into a club. So yeah, and we would go and see like Steve Aoki and I honestly don't remember many of the other ones. It was also around the time when like Four Loko was popular, so like memory gone. I don't remember anything. But yeah, it was just like a fun experience. And then by the time I graduated, I was like, all right, well, time to go to Miami for college. So that's when I went over there. And I was like mentioning earlier, like there wasn't really much college culture there.
Right.
So I found community through like shows that I liked with like Fantagram and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so then I started going to clubs. I had like a fake ID and and then I started working at the clubs. So, but yeah, that was kind of like how I found my community. And it really kind of also just like created my career path in a really weird roundabout way.
Yeah. It all goes into who you are and then who you become, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, cause like, you know, when I was in high school, I did love like the Bloody Beetroots cause it was very punk and like, you know, and I liked Fantagram cause it was like this indie sound that was like electronic. And so those are all still like really relevant to me currently. I even loved like working or listening to Teed. So to work with him later on was like, oh my God, you know, incredible. I was singing your songs when I was like 15, you know? Right. So it's kind of cool. And I tried to like keep that alive because also I felt like that music was so euphoric.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like music currently can be kind of maybe a little too straightforward or kind of dark.
Yeah, it can be dark or just repetitive and
or just like kind of just not have emotion at all. Like it's just like kind of party music.
Yes.
So I kind of like try to tap into that like emotional landscape sometimes of like that early indie EDM sound.
Right. I know even the stuff that people were hating at the time, like the cheesy big room EDM, probably had more emotion and like songwriting stuff than a lot of the newer stuff like that. That's just like, here's the craziest sound you'll ever hear, you know, or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's some cool stuff being made, but yeah, it does sometimes feel like we're emotionally dry,
right?
Which is fine. I think we needed that, right?
Yeah, it all goes in cycles and waves. And like you said, there's so much incredible music being made now and so many amazing things, but there was something special. Like there's that party electric feels. Have you ever gone to
it? Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah, I love
it. And like that, they just, you know, they'll play some new stuff, and I DJ it sometimes. Mike B's playing it all the time, and it's so fun to go back to that music and play it. But it's interesting because it is a lot of kids there too. And I feel like they're not all ages, but it's 18 and over. And also like, how hard is it to get into an 18 and over if you're probably like 16, but so they're definitely young kids and they listen to the music, but it's interesting DJing because you'll go, oh, if they love this song, they're going to love this. And then you play it and it's like, everybody's like, what is this? You know? So they only know what they've listened to like on playlists or something like that. They don't know all the blog house. Like I'll delve into my like older stuff and then I'm like, they know Crookers, but they don't know the other stuff, you know? So
yeah, that's interesting.
It's
also kind of amazing that like there's such, because that party's massive.
It's insane.
Massive.
Like, I did it 2 weeks ago and like we did the observatory in Orange County and it's like sold out, like 1,000 kids just staring at you like you're a band, you know, at a concert.
It's amazing.
And I'll play the Strokes, I'll play everything, you know, just full normal songs too. And they'll just be singing every word, loving it. It's almost like I realized if I DJ too much, it's annoying and it ruins the songs. I have to figure out the right amount, you know, to not like scratch or remix it too much. But then we did Vegas, that Area 15 place. Yeah. And it was like 2,000 kids. It felt like we were at Coachella or something. It was like, what is going on here? So, but I think it's like you said, people want maybe music that has more emotion. They want a thing where they can just let loose and go crazy and have fun, be themselves. And it's more of a show and it's not a nightclub and it's not all about like drinking and hooking up or something. It's like we're at a show just for fun with our friends.
Yeah. Also, there's just something so like lighthearted about that music.
Yeah.
I do think that like music has definitely taken a more serious tone, at least in the electronic space, but even within pop, maybe, I don't know. There is just something really like novel and like special about that era of music. And it's clear like, everyone understands that if it's selling out 2,000 tickets, that's more than most DJs.
Oh, it's crazy. I can't believe it. I mean, he doesn't even say who's DJing. You know? When the same night, like we're in Vegas doing that and Mike B's in San Diego doing a sold out House of Blues show, you know, for the same party.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
that's amazing.
I know. They just want the experience. You know, I think that plays a big part in everything now, you know, and it seems like even the bottle service clubs and the open format world is being hit in that respect, you know, where it's just changing, you know. And I think there's people are able to learn how to DJ a lot better, a lot more quickly now as well. So they don't need all the open format DJs traveling around to every club anymore.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I think it's easier for probably a producer now to set themselves apart and do the shows because they're like, listen to my songs. But in open format DJs, like maybe the other DJs are listening to their edits and mashups, but for the most part, they're like you said, trying to figure out what the crowd wants. And it used to be like, okay, there's a few people that are really good, let's fly them to every city. But now it's like there's amazing DJs in every single city. So
wow, yeah. And also I feel like the culture is also kind of focused in the open format space. I feel like it's been replaced by like TikTok DJs.
There's the TikTok DJs, and is bottle service even something people want anymore? I mean, obviously in Vegas and some places, you know, and LA, but it's different. You know, I feel like it, like it used to be, I don't know. It's not, doesn't have the same allure maybe as before.
You know, I can't really tell you the last time I've experienced bottle service culture outside of like a club that's like literally dedicated towards like dance music.
Yeah.
So like club space.
Right.
Which I could see bottle service working there because it's long hours. You want your own area.
Yeah.
But as far as like open format, yeah, I guess I haven't really been in a long time, but I do know that people are starting to feel that open format DJ is just in a weird place right now. And like,
yeah,
there's not, I don't know, maybe there's not a huge, I don't know. Well, you would be able to speak on this more. I mean, like,
yes.
is the market the same? Like, do clubs like,
no, it's different. I mean, and even the pandemic changed everything and I think gave everyone a break to step back and figure out what they were putting their energy into, what they're putting their money into and all of that, you know, and I think that, and also it made a lot of people quit. It was almost like all these legacy people that had been in the game for 15, 20 years and they're booking all the same DJs and then they're out and they're like a real estate agent now or something. And then all these new people are being given a shot and then they have their people they want to book or their types of music. And it changed, you know, the booking styles of certain clubs and I don't know. And even Vegas, I mean, I remember when dance music and EDM kind of came into the bottle service clubs and they were like, oh, we have to sell tickets now. This is just now, but it's going to go away. But I feel like it hasn't gone away. It's only grown into this huge industry.
Yeah. I mean, especially with like what Vegas is doing, I just saw that they're now like booking. Well, one thing I've noticed is like tech house has become the main form of EDM. That's the main thing.
Right. Because I guess it lends itself in a way to putting all types of other genres over the top of it in a way.
Kind of.
People can sing along, you know, like
mixed everything.
Yeah, like Ciara over the beat, you know, or something like that. Because even the DJs that get booked, I watch sometimes and the crowds, even if it's the biggest DJ ever, for the most part, some people don't know who they are. And everyone's from the middle of nowhere or something, you know, and they're all in Vegas. And even those big DJs have to like cater to the crowd a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely was like speaking about it with someone who felt like it was definitely a lot of work, especially at some of the clubs, like the day clubs.
Yeah,
where you're like, okay, people are here to like be in the pool and party, and you really have to work hard to get them to come to the booth and dance.
Yeah,
which that doesn't sound very fun to me. Like, I don't really want to. Like, I'd rather play for an audience that is just ready to dance to the music and actually party.
Yeah.
Versus like having to like work for it, I guess. But, you know, to each their own. I'm sure the paycheck is nice, so I'm not gonna not gonna complain. But yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, the other sort of weird thing to me is that I felt like that whatever it's called, like festival trap or like whatever
that's gone.
But in a way, there's still like, you know, Illenium and like all these big artists that will sell out these huge nightclubs. And I don't know how that translates to people dancing in Vegas, you know, it's like just these big drops of like a synth and a slow beat. But thriving. Yeah, that somehow is like still thriving in Vegas as a thing.
I know. It's kind of interesting that like trap, like successful trap evolved into like this like very melodic, like explosive sound.
Yeah. Almost like a movie trailer or something. Yeah. And like Odessa. And like they're amazing, you know, like so many of these groups. But it's interesting to see it work in Vegas and places like that.
Yeah, I haven't seen them in Vegas. The things I've seen in Vegas are like Jamie Jones and Marco Carolla and like Gorgon City. And
dope, yeah.
And I mean, it works. I guess I'm so used to that in my head. I'm like, yeah, that works because it works at Club Space. It works in Ibiza.
Yeah.
So that must make sense. But then, yeah, I guess.
I feel like Space and Ibiza are more, even Space has more of a European feel than Vegas. You know, Vegas
does
America.
Not. You're I know. Just like,
have you played in Vegas?
I have. I've done a couple things. I did Life is Beautiful last September. I've done Wynn Hotel,
Excess.
And then I did this other club called Disco Pussy.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in downtown, and it's more of like a locals kind of city club. And yeah, I do feel like it's kind of a weird scene.
Would you ever want to have a Vegas residency?
For convenience. It's right. So close. You know, that's nice. I like a short flight. but is it like a fulfilling experience? I don't know. Like, I think like the one thing I like about like the downtown scene is that it's like people who are from Vegas.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice. But yeah, I mean, when my favorite parties are usually ones where like there's a organic like dance music scene that's already bubbling and people are kind of like educated about it and they know how to get down to it. And it's like kind of fun. Like New York is always a great time. Like,
always.
Yeah. Everyone loves dancing in New York.
I know.
So it's just too far. It's like 6 hour flight. I hate that.
Yeah. Definite far. I know. I had to do that this weekend. It was brutal.
Me
like
too.
A Philly to LA, like so tired.
Yeah.
And I actually hit 1 million miles flown on that flight. And like, I got on the plane. I'm like, are they going to say something to me? And they didn't say anything to me. And I hadn't slept the night before. So I was like, all right, I don't have to talk to anybody. And I slept. And then I got off the plane and they were like waiting with like a sign and a bottle of champagne. I was all screwed up. Like, like looked horrible, but I was like, thank you guys. I'm like, I don't know if this is an accomplishment or a depressing moment in my life where
I said, surprise, here's champagne.
Surprise, you haven't seen your family for 10 years. It's like, I don't know, flying a million miles. I mean, good. I get my little status for life, I guess. And maybe they don't expect people in their 40s to get that. So I'm like, I'm going to live a lot longer, guys. I'm going to utilize this status. But yeah, it's like, partially depressing. It was like looking back on it, I'm like, this is cool. And also like, oh my God, how much have I missed from my life?
It's crazy. Yeah. You like flying is probably one of the worst aspects of the job.
Yes.
And yeah, I had a really brutal one this weekend because of the daylight savings.
Oh my God.
That really messed me up.
It was the worst. I'm still all messed up from it.
So like, I finished DJing at 2 a.m., which turned immediately into 3 a.m., and I had a 7 a.m. flight.
Oh, my God.
So I, like, lost one of my only 2 hours to sleep. And I was not pleased, and I had to DJ for 3 hours during the day at a day party in New York.
Oh, wow.
And, I wasn't going to drink this month, and, like, halfway through that set, I was like, if I don't drink tequila right now, I'm going to fall asleep. So we're just going to have to shoot it back and get through this one.
That's hilarious. I had very similar thing. Yeah, DJ till 2 in Atlantic City, and then wasn't going to drank tequila as well. And then I was like, oh, my God, it's 3 already. And I'm not even tired, too, because it's like, you know, and then we got to go to Philly to catch the flight. It was at 10 a.m., but it felt like it was, you know, 4 in the morning. So
It's brutal.
Yes, it's hard. What about like balancing your life, like not seeing friends or family or things like that? You know, now that you are touring nonstop, like you said, you haven't had time off since November.
Yeah, I mean, I have like every once in a while I'll have like one weekend off. But I don't know. It's part of me is okay with it. You know, I mean, family I'll see because I play in cities that they live in. So I'll see them there. Friends, I'm like, you know, touring is kind of difficult and being a DJ is kind of weird. And like what happens, I think, and I don't know if you had this experience, but over time you start to like have to shrink the group a little because some people just don't really know how to handle it.
Oh, God. That's, and yeah. Slowly but surely. So many people.
They just start to kind of like act
couldn't
out.
Couldn't come out with me. Anymore. Yeah. They just don't know how to act either around certain people or in certain places or certain experiences. And you're like, I'm trying to, this is my career
and
as
like,
fun
this
as it is.
My job. Yeah.
Yeah.
So slowly and surely, like that kind of friend group like dwindles to the people who are like really core. And then I see other people when I go out and that's always fun. And like, you know, if I'm in LA, I'll go get dinner with people and stuff like that. But it definitely like, kind of shrinks your group a little.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
that's true.
I balance it by like getting dinner, going to an event like every once in a while. I'll see a lot of my friends now at this point also are just like other touring DJs. They kind of become your like extended family.
Yeah. So you're like, we're all going to be in this place.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm like, oh, it makes it so much better when you're like, oh, me and this person are going to be playing the same show in this city. And then we're going to play again together the next night.
Yeah.
And we're going to go together. We're going to have a flight together. It's going to be so fun.
Yes.
So it's like things like that end up becoming like your like friends and family experiences.
That's true.
But yeah, it's weird. It definitely like shifts things. And like the people that can hang, I'm so excited to have them around. Like not even a problem, but it it does become a bummer when like people really don't know how to act, and you have to like be like, hey, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't know if I could like invite you anymore, you know? That's not always a good conversation to have.
No, but you need to.
Yeah. And like, it definitely also, when you start to like make new friends or like date or things like that, you just end up like picking people who can hang.
Yes,
that's like,
that's true.
That becomes like the criteria.
Yeah.
So it's a interesting situation to be in for sure.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, it's weird on your brain or mental health or however you want to say it, you know, because I feel like we're constantly, you're going like at light speed and then you just stop. And then you have to go back, and it's like constant, like complete stop, complete craziness, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it's like hard on your brain. Or
you get
or
used to it after a while, right? Like eventually you're just like, this is normal.
Right.
And my friends and family and strangers are like, don't you just hate flying every weekend? And I'm like, you just get used to it.
Yeah. You're just in a zone.
You find like coping mechanisms. Like mine is I have a jazz in the background playlist on Spotify and an eye mask, and I just put that on and I pass out on the plane. And I've like found my system, or like, you know, having like lounge access so that you could eat before a flight is like really nice. There's just like little things that you like learn to develop over time, and that just your body gets used to it. But that first year when I started like touring, my body was like, what is this? And then I was like, here's like a stress ailment. Your stomach is going to hurt for a whole year. And then like, and now I'm like much better. Now I don't really have that problem.
That's so funny. Yeah, that's true. You know, your body is not used to it. And your brain, I mean, it takes a little while to get used to it. And then once you're in the zone, yeah, people are like, how are you flying like this much? And you're like, I don't know. I just know it's there. I have my bag half packed.
You've got
at
a system.
Times. Yeah, you have your little
It becomes
system.
A habit.
Yeah, get your little TSA pre-check.
TSA pre-check, clear, you know, carry on only. And then you just go and you have the lounge for breakfast and you get on the plane. Maybe you're lucky you get upgraded and, you know, you just, it becomes like a routine.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've kind of like gotten used to it at this point, but I definitely appreciate my weekends off.
Yes, I know. I know. I thought I'd get upgraded on the million mile flight. I was like, come on, guys.
Like
I was walking
birthday.
Up. I'm like, let's go. Yeah. I'm like, it's crazier than my birthday. This will never happen again for the rest of my life. You know, when I got it, they were like, now on to 2 million. I'm like, I don't think so. Like,
how would that even happen?
I don't know. I'd rather just do it on another airline and just get each one gold for life or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Something like that. But yeah, it's a crazy life we live. And so what about something I wanted to ask you about too, sort of a difference between open format DJs, who are a lot of the people that listen to this show, and you know, a ticketed artist, I guess, or whatever you would call it. Like, do you have to worry about selling tickets to your shows? Are you paying attention to that?
I try not to.
Right. But that's a big thing that I think that a lot of open format DJs take for granted or don't understand. And they're like, they're just getting paid no matter what, you know, and they could stack up all these shows if they want, but they don't have to worry about the amount. Obviously, if nobody ever comes or they do a horrible job, they won't get booked again. But you have to actually promote the shows and sell the ticket. I mean, other people promote it, but you have to worry about how many tickets are sold and
that used to be
in
like,
that game sort of.
Yeah, it used to be a real big stress, especially my first year, because I had an agent that was like really pushing me to do headline shows, and I don't think I was ready. Like I was brand new,
right?
You know, and my name was just starting to like get pushed in the
right.
Scene.
Like, why put you in a place that's too big just because it seems cool to do that place?
Right. For like,
if
the
it's
wow
empty,
factor.
Then you're gonna look horrible.
Right, and it was stressful for me, and like. I mean, there were some good shows, and then there were like obviously a lot of experiences that were not ideal. And so last year I basically was like, don't book me for headline shows. I just want to do like festival slots, support slots, make it easy.
Right.
I want to like, I don't want to like stress about this right now. It's not fair for me to stress about it right now. I'm too new, you know? And, you know, I think agents just like want to be like, look what I got, you know?
Exactly. I booked my artist here and we're doing this. But
so last year, like I had an agent shift. I have these two really great agents now. And the last one was great as well. He's awesome.
Right,
it was just a different
find
strategy.
That works for you.
Yeah. And I think these ones understood that I was like, I just want to take a year where I'm not like biting my nails over if I'm going to sell out a show.
Right.
And honestly, I think it was a good strategy because it allowed me to get my name and my brand out there, right? Playing all these festivals and support slots. So now that I'm doing headline shows this year, they are selling out and like they are like doing well. And so that's like a bit of a relief. I do still stress about it, but one of the things I've noticed, and it's like very popular conversation amongst promoters and like artists, yeah, is that a lot of times unless you're like the biggest DJ, a lot of times like tickets don't really sell in advance anymore. So
right. That's what the Electric Fields people were showing me too. He's like, look, we've sold this many tickets, but then when it leading up to it, the day before, the day of, yep, it would spike like crazy.
Spike. Yeah. So a lot of people.
That's very anxiety producing.
Oh, right. Well, so now I'm like, don't even tell me anymore. Like, what's the point of me for a whole month worrying about how there's like only 50 tickets sold when the day of 800 sell? You know, it's like.
Right. Like you have to be Taylor Swift or Olivia Rodrigo.
Right.
Or something.
Like, you know, okay. Like maybe like Dom Dalla, John Summit. Like those are like the big tech house acts that you can guarantee they're going to sell out. They're pretty much like pop acts at this point, you know? Yeah. So yeah, like they're going to sell out. Of course they're going to sell out in advance. Maybe like if you're like a European act that doesn't come to the country a lot, maybe that's like an opportunity for you to sell out in advance. But otherwise, like there's no point in stressing about it because more than likely like day of, that's when the ticket sales are going to go up.
That's so interesting.
And I know promoters are miserable over it because they don't know how to staff their venues. Is it going to sell out? Is it not? Who knows? We'll find out the day before.
Oh,
and
man.
Like it's a bit difficult. So
I wonder why that is.
I have a theory that the pandemic and just ensuing like worldwide drama since then has caused people to like not really know whether or not they're going to be able to show up to a show. And so they're like, okay, like, well, maybe I'll wake up with COVID. So how am I supposed to know if I'm going to be able to go and like, who's going to buy the ticket? And like, so I think people are just kind of like waiting till day of to see if like they're in the right headspace or physical space to be attending a show.
Right.
That's kind of like how I have assumed.
That's a good take on it. Or their friends are just really flaky and they're like, I can't depend on these people till the day of.
Yeah. Or like, who knows what's going to happen? You know, is it going to be like a... Like New York over the weekend had like ridiculous weather, like really, really crazy. In fact, like the promoter that I played with was telling me that the day before at night that the show was sold out, but 50% of the people didn't show up. 50% of ticket holders didn't show up because of the weather.
Oh, wow. But they still got bought the tickets.
Yeah. But I mean, the bartenders are probably pissed.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. No, I was supposed to go and DJ tomorrow night in Austin, like an after hours thing. And they were like, the weather's so crazy. We're canceling all the outside shows, anything that was on a rooftop. And I'm like, oh, damn.
Yeah. Well,
what if
Austin,
I would have like made plans to go there, you know?
Yeah. I hear Austin and in general Texas, it'll be like 70 and then 30 the next day.
Oh, my God. I was there last weekend and it was like 88 in the day. I'm like, you know, but I've been there before and been part of that weather. So I saw everyone wearing their t-shirts and shorts and I'm like, oh, you're going to be fucked tonight. And then it was like 40 degrees and raining. And
oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's kind of like maybe the attitude people are taking.
It's weather horrible.
Weather's horrible. Are you going to get sick?
Yeah, that's true.
What's the financial situation? I feel like that's always kind of
We are in a very unknown time, I guess, where we were thrown, you know, up for a loop like 4 years ago and now.
Yeah, now everyone's like, well, I can't be
PTSD.
Certain.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. Well, let's talk about your label.
Okay.
What can you do? You want to describe it to do it justice?
Yeah, I mean, so Mi Domina is basically just like a label I started in 2021 that was basically designed to like give me a home for some of my releases.
Okay.
But also just as like a platform basically to host other artists that have this kind of like mix between like punk and electronic sound. But naturally, like not many people have that sound. So haven't really found too many, but I have actually started getting releases that are more in line with that.
Nice.
Especially as I kind of like develop my sound more and I really like start to advertise that my corner is that like rock meets electronic.
Right, that's what
space.
I was thinking as they hear even your new song and stuff.
Yeah, so now I'm starting to actually
gravitate towards you.
Right. I think like 2 years ago when I started it, people had this idea that I was like a Dirty Bird artist.
Yes.
So I was getting a lot of tech house songs and I was like, this is missing the mark for me, you know? So now I'm actually starting to get that. And so I'm like excited to kind of like really put those songs out and like, you know, push that sonic corner, I guess, again.
That's cool. Have you released much stuff yet?
So I have two EPs that I did. And then since then, I like kind of took, last year was my hiatus.
Right.
I was like, no headline shows. I need to just focus on like realigning. I had a new management team and then another management team and then another management team. I kind of kept switching hands last year, not to my own fault. Just things happen. And it's really, honestly, I would say like one of the hardest things about being an artist is like really building a team that you are proud of.
Right.
And it's kind of like starting a business and hiring employees. Like it's just going to be difficult.
Right.
So I think I spent a lot of last year kind of establishing that. And now that I'm like really settled this year, I'm able to kind of really put my attention into the right creative things.
That's great. Well, I mean, so when you do build a team or get the right team, what are the most important parts? Or,
well, I noticed that everything is different for everyone. It really, like, you got to be kind of aware of your like own self and like the way that you like to communicate and stuff. Like, I like people who can like put out fires and just be chill, you know. I don't like people that are like maybe more antsy. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like people who are like very emotionally regulated. Okay. Let's put it that way. And like nice and easy to talk to and like communicative, and just gets things done. I mean, that's a pretty standard one, but,
are there many managers or agents like that? I don't think so.
Well, I am pretty stoked about my agents. They are really like even keeled, super chill.
Nice.
And my manager now is like, someone that I feel like I could like communicate with. But yeah, in general, I've always had like managers that are pretty like, even tempered, I would say.
That's great.
So, but yeah, it is like something that I find to be like really important. And then, just people who are able to kind of like utilize resources. I went with Red Light. I think that like as a company, they have like a lot of like infrastructure. So it's been nice to work with them because I feel like a lot more support. And yeah, I mean, it's not easy though.
Yeah.
And like finding the right person for you is really, really hard.
I'm sure.
Like I can tell just based off phone calls, like, oh, I don't know if I would ever be able to feel like I can open up to this person. Right.
Right.
So it's like that becomes like a big priority.
Right. Cause it's strange. It's a mixture of business and your actual life.
Right. Yeah. And also, I mean, art is such a emotionally driven thing.
Yeah.
So if I'm having an issue with like the creative direction of something and it's making me feel anxious and making me upset because I'm like, this is not getting executed properly. And I want to make sure that we don't release this before it is, and so on and so forth. It is something that like is an emotional experience. So being able to kind of like have someone where I'm like, okay, like this is not, it's not about you. But I need you to help me figure this out, you know?
Yeah.
It's like really important, like having someone kind of in your corner.
Right.
And then just having someone knowledgeable. I like people that are well-liked, you know. I don't like having like an asshole manager.
Right. Like everyone hates that person.
Right. Like I don't need someone that's like feared, you know. That's not my vibe.
Yeah.
So, but it's just about understanding like what you want as an artist. And I think like the more self-aware you are about how you like to communicate and what your needs are, the better it is to find, like the easier it'll become to find people that fit that. But it is kind of like dating.
Right. Oh my God. So much. Yeah. It's like you're in a marriage almost. You know?
Yeah. It's literally like,
because you're sharing the business and the emotions and like so many different things,
right,
and opinions and constantly trying to talk each other in and out of things.
So like if you're not able to really like navigate healthy relationships in general, good luck.
Yes.
But like, I guess.
Right. You have to learn to accept people for who they are and that you're not going to change them, and utilize the positive parts of who they are and not focus on the negative, because no one's going to be perfect.
Right. But it's so crazy how it is like dating.
Yeah.
And I've kind of had to like navigate that, and.
It's definitely like dating,
like,
for sure.
Like, thank God for therapy, because I could sit there and just be like, all right, like this is kind of weird. Like, let's talk about it.
Because you can stay with someone for a reason that maybe isn't good, but they're good at that thing, you know, and then you finally break off and you're like, oh, I feel so free from all the other things. It wasn't worth it to be with them for that.
And it's like literally like dating.
Yeah, it has all the same aspects, you know.
I know. And you're like, okay, well, we need to like have better communication. And like,
oh my God,
if I have an issue, I have to communicate it with you. And you have to like, you know, not invalidate that experience, but like rather like figure out how we can work together on it, because we're a team. And
exactly.
It is so silly how it's like that, but it really does become like that. And like, like. I think, you know, some people get lucky. Some people find managers right at the beginning of their career.
Yeah.
And they just ride it out with them till the very end, and they have a really great experience, and both people grow together like a true marriage.
You know? Yeah.
And then other people switch hands a lot. And I guess, like, it's just, again, the more you know about yourself, the better and easier it'll be to find a right manager for yourself. So, yeah, that's kind of how my, like, last year has gone.
Wow. But, I mean, it sounds like you're really getting into a good place with your career and everything's going well. And you're setting yourself up to just continuously grow and have your dreams come to fruition and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's really, I, like, always picture it as, like someone, like, carving marble. You're just like chipping away.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, here's like a human statue, but it was a block of marble like 10 years ago, you know?
That's really cool. Yes, that's a good way to look at it.
So, I mean, I think like at this point I'm feeling like, okay, we're really starting to see the human statue, you know?
Right.
I'm like, okay, cool. We have a couple details obviously that we could like really perfect here, but
yeah.
I'm definitely feeling more like things are starting to align, like creatively, like the vision is coming together. And I've got like a really good team around me of people that I like to work with, both creatively and on like the management agent side. So, yeah, I mean, it's a slow process, but it works. Some people, it's a fast process. I like to work more cautiously, though.
It sounds like it, but I think it's important to do what you're doing and hone in on who you are and who you want to be and be serious about it and be put your foot down and not go, okay, well, I could do this or be this and try to adapt to something you're not.
Yeah, it's like I definitely prefer to have a strong ethos and like make sure that I'm like really secure in every decision I make where I'm like, yes, this really keeps telling that narrative.
Right, and I think it lets everyone else respect you, you know, for who you are, and then the right people come into your life and connect with.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about where I'm at currently is I'm starting to see like all these people that I used to look up to are now starting to like reach out for collabs and stuff like that. And I'm like, yay.
Amazing.
I'm like, I finally hit the, you know, the specific target. Like they're starting to respect me and the thing that I've been trying to build for the last few years. So.
That's so cool. Like who are some of those people and who are some of your influences and people you look up to?
So like, for instance, like I really like Matthew Deere or, like Teed was another one that was really cool. Who else have I worked with? Cats and Dogs. I used to listen to like their DJ mixes, like a radio show they did like 10 years ago. Just things like that, like getting appreciated by like Solomon, you know, signing to his label Dynamic was really cool. So things like that where I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. You know, I have like a lot of collabs that I'm working on currently and I'm like, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about them because they're not even like done yet. So.
Right. It's all right. Keep the mystery.
Yeah. Keep the mystery. They'll come out eventually.
Yes. You'll hear them.
But yeah, it's cool to just feel acknowledged, I guess, at this point, you know? And I'm like, okay, we're doing the right thing. People are starting to get it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a weird, like, amygdalation of a bunch of different things that I like, including dance music. And I guess now people are starting to be like, yeah, that's a cool sound. And I'm like, cool, you know? Wow, who knew?
Well, great. You'll be the person to bring it all back to the feel-good emotional music.
Hopefully. Yeah.
But it's definitely different than most stuff I'm listening, you know, that I hear. So, I mean, I think it's great.
Thanks.
What you're doing. Yeah. And just on some like nerdy DJ stuff, you were saying you used to DJ with a computer and do Serato and stuff, right?
I used to, well, in my like local DJ era, I DJ'd literally on anything. So it was USB sticks, Serato, depends on like what was at the club.
Well, that's good. You can be well-rounded.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't used Serato in years, but.
Right. So now you're just strictly USB sticks. And how do you organize that? Like you do it in Rekordbox, right?
Mm-hmm. But
like.
iTunes.
Okay.
I have like a bunch of playlists.
Okay.
And so I'll, like, when I download music, I immediately organize it into the playlists. And then.
By genre or just by feeling or.
Yeah.
Type of party or. Okay.
So, like, I have, like, genre playlists, and then I'll also add it to playlists that I've been, like, building. Like, I have one that I built for sound, which is, like, at this point now, it's, like, 4 or 5 hours. No, probably, like, 8 hours, 9 hours.
Yeah.
Of music. And just based on, like, that's, like, my current sound, I would say.
Yeah.
So I keep filing music that kind of fits that into there. And then I put, like, all the other downloads that are, like, maybe not exactly that into, like, their respective genres.
Okay.
I'm just, like, very organized.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be with, like, a USB stick. There's just too much music. Like,
I know.
And I'm not, like, I mean, you could search on a CD CDJ. You could like search.
Right, but you don't want to be doing it too much. And more and more, you're the star of the show. Like even when I did that Vegas thing I was telling you about where I opened for Too Short last week, like I didn't realize when I showed up, it was at Marquee Vegas and they had installed these cameras that just like are point at your face and you're on the huge screens all over. And I'm like, you know, I'm on Serato. I'm open format. I'm opening. I'm trying to figure out what to do. And I look over and I'm like, I'm looking at my computer in a huge screen. Like, I look crazy right now. So I had to just like not do that, you know, and like even if I'm playing a song, I have no idea what's coming next. Like act like I know what's happening, you know, and then just load up something and make it work. But yeah, you don't want to be searching through all your stuff. And I know you can do it on the 3000s, I guess, easier now. But you want to be able to scroll through or be in a specific crate of either your sound or go to another genre or something.
Yeah, I usually like will pop into that. That one's called Sound. I think it's called like Sound Baby. And then the other one's called like Hollow Weekend because it was like a playlist I made 2 years ago for Halloween weekend that is like a bit darker, more tech house sound. I did it for Miami. So it's like between that and then my current one, I've got like pockets where I know where I can go, like if I need to continue the vibe. And then, I have like my genre playlists.
And then what, you just update it?
I just create new, like, so I have like, I have Miami Music Week next week and I have like 5 DJ sets. So I'm probably going to create like 5 different playlists for that just because it is like a showcase kind of week.
Right. And different, the same people might be at different events.
Right. Exactly. And I just want to make sure that like when I show up, I have cool things to bring to every party. But there is a lot more like planning in advance. It's almost like being a vinyl DJ. You're like bringing a crate. Right. You're like, this is the music I'm playing and that's about it, you know?
Yeah, this is the big crate. This is the front part of all my stuff. These are the other ones that might work.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But do you, when you say iTunes, like do you just drag the files in and then just play them with like no cue point or anything?
So I organize into iTunes and then I go into Rekordbox and my iTunes playlists are in Rekordbox.
Oh, got it.
And then I like basically like sync those into my USB.
Right. And do you set like cue points and or loops or any of that? Or
you know, I used to. Well, it depends. If I'm playing like a bigger festival stage and I have an hour, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I have an hour to get through this, and like
you want to be like as efficient as possible,
right? You know, obviously, like I've been pushing my team to kind of just book me for longer sets in general, because I just think that's, you just get a better crowd that way. And I don't really need to do cue points for that. I can just vibe out.
Yeah.
But yeah, cue points are really helpful when you're doing like an hour long festival set.
Right. Yeah. I just wonder, you know, the different organization types that everybody has, you know, going up there and just, you still want to have fun, but be organized.
Oh yeah. I also, like to organize my music by key.
Oh, okay.
So like everything kind of sonically just blends perfectly.
Yeah.
Not that I can't mix out of key.
Of course.
But it always is kind of nice when they flow.
Yeah.
And also it gives me more boundaries to work within.
Right.
Because there's just so much music. How else would I organize it?
Yeah.
Not by BPM, you know?
Right. Have you had any horrible moments where
all the time.
Like me too. good. No, what were some awful, either something not working technically or feeling like
okay, so before I was an artist, when I was just a local open format DJ, I got booked for something that I didn't even know I was booked for. So I like I had to like randomly like just show up.
Oh wow.
It was a really bad promoter.
Yes.
And I didn't know. Okay, first of all, they booked me. Had no idea. And then I just saw my name on the flyer. Like, they never confirmed anything with me. So then I get there, and they're like, oh, yeah, you have to DJ on vinyl, like Serato. And I had never done that before. So I did, like, right before my set, download Serato.
Oh,
and then, like, learn how. I was, like, learning in real time. And they had 2 vinyl, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And I did it, and it was fine. We figured it out, and, like, I don't know how. Was it the greatest set I've ever done? No. But it's fine. We got through it. And then there was a second part of my set that was on, like, an outside stage. And it was, like, this small stage with a light on me. And there was only 1 vinyl. And I didn't know how to do that yet. Right. So I had to, like, figure out how to do that.
Oh, God.
In front of everyone on stage with a spotlight.
Nightmare.
Like, literally like a nightmare. I like first day learning Serato and like, I'm just like, okay.
Right.
And then I got off and I mean, it wasn't perfect, right? Like my mixing was, I was figuring it out as I went. Like right before I got on, the guy was like, okay, so you're just going to copy the song over to the...
Oh, like instant doubles and stuff like that.
I'm like, okay, we're going to learn how to do that in front of people today.
With a spotlight.
With a spotlight. I still like occasionally, for a long time, I would have like nightmares about that. DJ nightmares. But yeah, that was not a great one. And then honestly, like what else have I experienced? There's got to be more.
You block them out.
I know. I mean, honestly, like at this point, I can't, like most of my horror stories happen in my dreams at this point. I'm like, you have like DJ nightmares and you're like, oh yeah, nothing is reading on my USB or I don't even know these songs. Like, what are these?
No, I've had that. Or like, I feel like I'm changing it or I know I'm supposed to change the song, but then it runs out and it just, there's like something stopping me from putting in the next song. And I'm like,
oh yeah, when it runs out.
I don't even know what it is. Yeah.
And it's silent and everyone's leaving. You know what's so funny. Last weekend I was in New York. My best friend's from there, like someone I've known since high school.
Right.
And she was telling me that she had a DJ dream. She's not a DJ.
Oh, God.
She's not even a DJ. She had a DJ nightmare of me getting too drunk and walking off stage and the music stopping.
That's a true best friend.
Yeah, she's experienced. I was like, you're not supposed to have DJ anxiety dreams. That's-
she's like, I'm in your brain now. That's crazy.
I was like, what are you doing in here?
I know. What are the worst DJ anxiety dreams? I mean, definite song running out.
Yeah. You not understanding the music at all. You're like, what songs are these? Or they're all just like random cymbals. You can't pick a song for some reason. Or like the equipment's not working.
Yeah. They can't picking a song. Like, can't pick a song. Like, why? It's just like your brain just jumbled up. And I could feel myself trying to pick it, but it's like something stopping my body from doing it or something.
Yeah. Crazy.
That is crazy.
But yeah, I don't know, like oh my gosh, I have, yes, most recent.
Okay.
This is probably like my worst one, and like I think I always cringe, and it wasn't even like anything that really had to do with me. I was like a very green kind of new touring artist. Mm-hmm. And it was the same year that I was having like stomach problems all year, because it was my first time like really touring. I was playing the Doolab stage at Coachella, and I had a really great slot time. Like 3,000 people were there. I was like, oh my God, this is insane. And then like about 20 minutes before I'm supposed to end my set, Disclosure went on at a stage like all the way on the other side of the festival, and my stage cleared.
Oh no, because everyone told each other and
they're like,
all
Disclosure's
left.
On. It's the biggest house right. act in the world. Exactly. Me against Disclosure, I would have been there, you know?
Yes.
And yeah, it emptied. And I knew it wasn't my fault. Like, there's nothing I could do about that.
Yeah, you can't take it personal.
No, but I did take it personal. I can't help it.
You're supposed to not take it personal, but it's going to hurt you no matter what.
And so, like, logically, I was like, bummed. Or no, logically, I was like, I understand.
Right.
Emotionally, I was like, I am not well today.
Oh, God.
And I was so new.
That's
and
awful.
I just like played it off and like tried not to get emotional about it. But yeah, it sucked. And it was depressing. And and like also my friends were there and everyone was there. And I was just like, they're like, it's not your fault. You're fine. And I'm like, I don't want to hear you talk about this moment ever again in my life.
Let's block this out.
And you know, the DJs that came on after me are like, they flew all the way from the UK and they had to start with like three people.
Oh,
and again, like an hour prior, the 3,000.
Right.
So it like that was not a fun experience for me. Wouldn't recommend it. I definitely tell people I will not play at the same time as Disclosure anymore.
Ever.
I'm like, ever. Sorry, not going to play at the same time.
I mean, that's the hard part about those things where everybody's there. You know, if you get, I guess, a bad time.
Well, yeah, I guess I didn't know because they don't announce the lineups.
Right.
So like the lineup came out like maybe like a couple days prior to the festival starting. And then I was like, so what I thought was an amazing slot time.
Yeah.
Ended up being like the worst. And actually they changed the schedule the following weekend so that it was more like broken up. So that.
Did you DJ that?
No, it was they do two different weekends.
Also, of course, you only got the one weekend. Oh God.
Yeah. So that was like pretty horrific experience. And it like definitely colored a lot of my experience for that year.
Right.
Yeah, would not recommend.
Oh, man. But you seem like you have thick skin. Like, you're able to, like...
I got
like,
through it.
Yes. Every time you're telling these stories, you're like, we got it. We got through it, you know? And then look at you now. So it's
yeah.
all good.
I mean, again, I kind of see them as, like, learning experiences. And
yeah.
humbling experiences.
Right. Well, I guess from a positive side, what about like incredible shows where you just felt like, I can't believe this is happening, or I was reading the list of the amount of incredible festivals and places that you've DJed just in the past year or two, right? Well, I know you took that time off, but
even last year, I DJed all these festivals and it was awesome.
Right.
The pressure wasn't as bad. And I really actually last year started to hone in on like a really good touring set and festival set. And I like what that sounds like and how I can make that really pop and leave a great impression. So like I had a really good experience at Outside Lands.
Nice.
Where like the kids actually broke the stage from jumping so much.
Oh my God, I saw that.
Yeah,
online.
It was crazy. And then I had a really good experience at Sound in January where we sold out the club and people were there till like the very end.
That's
like
great.
At 3:30 in the morning. Even just this last Sunday was a really good experience. So I've had like wonderful experiences as well. And I think like these are all just like things that you have to learn over time.
Of course.
Yeah, and sometimes I'm like, man, I should not have been on that Doolab stage that early in my career, you know, but no, it's okay. It was a learning experience and everything works out in the end.
Yeah. So. That's so cool. I mean, well, I love to see the trajectory, you know, of your career, and it honestly just feels like you're in this beginning bubbling thing, even though you've gone through so much to get here. And I'm sure people that are just getting to know you are probably like, oh, she just came out of nowhere. You're like, I've done so much.
It's been crazy.
Do not discount all the work. Being the promoter and going to the raves at 15 and all that, it all plays into it. You know?
Yeah, it's all part of the story. And the people that have known me throughout those years are always just like rooting for me now because they're like, yeah, this makes total sense. You've been raving since 15.
Yeah.
So.
Wait, one thing you said that was interesting before we get out of here was like you said you figured out how to make a festival set pop. Like, are you able to give any tips on that? Or
yeah,
what that means?
I mean, obviously, like just high energy tracks, and I would say that's it. Just high energy tracks.
Right. Yeah, you've been able to test out the tracks and the timing on them, and just figure out how to like.
Yeah.
Get the crowd with you. Such a massive crowd.
Yeah, definitely. And I know when I can take breaks from that. Like when I can like veer away from the high energy. Now I'm like at the state. So last year I spent a lot of time like, and even this year, I basically kind of like made it a mantra. I was like, I just want people to go crazy all the time.
Right.
You know, so I was like, that's kind of been my attitude. So like with my sets, like I might veer off into like, you know, a UK garage track, but it'll still be like a fun hype moment. And what I'm really like realizing now is that like US audiences are like much more educated in dance music than ever before, in my opinion, like the mainstream is. So they're like really receptive to bigger tracks.
Right.
So it doesn't matter like the genre, but they'll like it. As long as it like has a bang, it's cool. So I've just been like kind of figuring out like within each genre like what songs those are, and like I it's nice to take people on that journey now, and like I'm able to kind of like again like weave in through genres, and I just know like the qualifications of a big banging track.
Right. You seem like you've had like this confidence through your whole career in a way. Like, where does that come from?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe just like blind faith. I'm like, if I don't figure this out, I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Right. But sometimes that's what carries people to the next level. Like you said, quitting the job, not having the 9-to-5. I know people shouldn't be embarrassed about having a job and trying to make it all work, and I'm not saying don't do that, but at the same time, like, you got to just take that leap.
Yeah. Well, also my dad was he was always telling me about, I think it was like, what was that talk show host? The one with the moon? You know who I'm talking about, right? He has all the cars.
Jay Leno. With the moon.
Because he had the moon looks, logo. Yes. Yeah.
I'm like thinking of like a McDonald's commercial. But
so he basically has this like quote that said that like, if you want to be a creative in any field, like you have to be broke, because that's the only real motivation, I guess.
Right.
So I don't know if that's true. That's the philosophy that I ended up taking on with me, where it was like, if I am too comfortable financially, I'm not going to push hard enough to be a DJ and to be an artist and to figure it out.
Right.
And you know, like that's kind of like where I came to in like 2019 when I didn't have that tech job anymore. And I was like, okay, like I'm here. in a position where I recognize that the only way I'm ever going to make it as an artist is to get signed to a record label and like start releasing music with record label, with a record label that has a built-in audience.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, within months, I was able to get signed to Dirty Bird. Like, it was kind of like almost like a weird coincidence, but it was like I made that decision because I knew that I had no other way of doing it.
Yeah.
And so that's how I ended up. But yeah, it's, I would say like the main motivator is the fact that I'm like, well, I don't have a backup plan here. So
I know, but a lot of times that's good. You know, yeah. You have to put yourself in that position. Why do you think you needed to sign to a label? Because I know there's so much debate where people are like, I do everything myself. You know, I don't need anything. Or people are want to be on every label. Like, do you think someone that's up and coming, that's a better route for them to go?
I think that there is a lot to gain from affiliation with other established acts.
Yeah.
And it really helps a lot to do that. Obviously, it's like nice to release on your own label. And honestly, I mean, you'd probably benefit from it in a financial perspective. But I do think that like, yeah, you benefit from collaborations and working with other artists who have established fan bases so that it's just exposure. Like, yeah. I guess like, okay, I could spend all my time doing TikToks and stuff like that. And like, but then like, I don't really know, no offense to the TikTok artists, but like, I don't know how.
Well, it's about to be illegal anyway.
Right. I don't even know what
that's happening.
But it's like, it's a different type of, okay. Especially in dance music. Affiliation is everything.
Yeah.
And if you're not affiliated with any type of artists, people don't really like want to work with you. And so like being affiliated with, for instance, with Dirty Bird, while it can, you know, at the time it could also close doors because there's like more serious techno heads, you know?
Yeah.
It like put me in, first of all, it gave me gigs because Dirty Bird had a whole event series as well. It affiliated me with a bunch of artists, which then led to other collabs and so on and so forth. So it's just like, you benefit from working with other people.
Right.
And I recognized, because I was releasing music and it was getting Spotify plays. Like, I wasn't like doing badly independently.
Right.
And I probably could have pushed forward that way, but I don't know if it would have worked as well.
Right.
I wasn't gaining fans. I was gaining like passive listeners.
Yeah. I heard you say that on another podcast that you were like, I got 100,000 streams, but I didn't have any fans.
Right.
And that's such an interesting thing because everyone just promotes how many streams, you know, like, oh,
there's no connection.
My YouTube got a million views, but it's like, okay, but the internet is weird. Unless people know who you are, they're not going to follow you. And that's even how the different websites work or the social media sites. Like TikTok, you can get way more followers, but maybe not as many fans. Instagram, right. The people will be more involved in your life, maybe, or I think, you know, so.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like you have to fire on all cylinders. Like, basically, like, I find that like successful artists are popular online, but also popular in real life.
Yes.
And like, you could have an incredible touring career and like 18,000 or less listeners on Spotify.
Right.
And you could be like crushing it playing with like all the biggest acts.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really, there's not really a correlation. I find that like it's best, like my strategy is like good touring career, good artist online career. And then so that's why like a lot of times when I make music, I try to have DJs in mind because that's like that bridge. You can have music online and you could also have DJs playing it in real life. And that's like that's where you kind of want to hit both markets. Otherwise it's just like, yeah, you're not really gonna get very far.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's probably somewhat of a two-way street with either a mentorship or a record label putting your stuff out, because even the older, bigger artists, they want to be associated with young, amazing talent and creativity. And I think it can inspire them, make them keep being relevant and look cool. And rappers do it, you know, Drake's always doing with songs with new rappers, you know, and Tiesto and like whoever there, you always notice like, oh, what the hell they did, or Diplo or whoever, you know, does that kind of stuff. So
yeah, it's always good to kind of keep your like ear to the pulse of like what's coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've just found that like over the years, like some of my greatest experiences are the ones where I worked with other people, you know, and signed to other labels and things like that. And it really was something that like someone had told me and they were like, well, you're making really good music, but to get anywhere further, you probably need to like sign with a record label because you can only do so much like independently.
Right.
I mean, granted, like Because like, even look at like Chance the Rapper, like, yeah, he was independent the whole time, but like he was getting collabs with like all of these bigger acts.
Yeah.
Like you always need that kind of downward cosign where you're like, you're here and someone from up here is like, hey, you know?
Exactly. Then that other people will actually notice and go, oh, wait a second.
Because that's what it is.
I trust their vision or what they say.
Right. It's like people aren't really going to put you on really, like tastemakers will know. But
yes.
But like everyone else is a follower, you know, and they're just going to like follow what the next big thing is, the next trend is. So in the case of Dirty Bird, like Claude Von Stroke has this incredible fan base and the label has this incredible fan base and they trust everything he does. So if he's putting on an artist, these fans are now your fans. Right. And that's just a great way to start a career as an artist.
Yeah.
And so like. Like going with that strategy, I was able to kind of just like, okay, now from Dirty Bird, I'm going to go to like Black Book and I'll work with this artist and that artist. And I creatively align with these people. It's not like a complete departure, but
yeah, of course.
It just helps. You're kind of like collecting coins as you go. You're like, okay, you know,
right.
So now it's like, once you get to a certain level, you can kind of establish yourself independently. Like I'm doing now with that last release where I'm like, okay, yeah, like it was a collab, but it was on a relatively new label that doesn't, it's not really like a DJ label, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm able to release it and have like respect, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've kind of established myself and got the cosigns, you know? It's just like, so it's a silly thing, but yeah.
Right. Is there anything you would change about the industry we're in that you've, you know, learned as we've gone on, like that you feel like could use adjustment or?
Yeah. I think like the streaming, like, system could do better. I think financially it's like not really advantageous to artists at the moment.
Right.
But I think I think about this and it and how it affects like literally every medium online. Mm-hmm. And I think we're starting to see like a shift. Like even with like news articles, like you have to pay for them now. You know? There's like starting to be more paywalls and stuff.
Right.
It's kind of weird. We're in a weird place.
I know. But I mean what could make the streaming better, I wonder.
I just wish they like came up with a better, instead of like a subscription or like even if it was a subscription, it like led to you having like coins that you used to purchase the songs.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So that you could listen to them unlimited. Otherwise it's just a radio. You split it like that. I don't know. I have ideas.
That's pretty interesting, honestly. That's
I'm just
really
like,
cool.
Use that instead of like just unlimited everything forever.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't really value music and there's so much like so many hours put into creating and getting good at creating and and for it to be devalued like that is just sometimes a bummer. But
it's strange. It is weird because music was purchased and it was a business, but also before that it was probably all free. So it's such a weird cycle of the way it's gone through. But now it's just like these people at the top that can just collect billions of dollars.
And then it's like there's no transparency.
Like, we're trying to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not ideal. I would say that's not ideal. I also don't think the current like major label system is very fair. They used to be the big marketers and now they're relying on like artists to just TikTok themselves away.
Yeah.
It's like, I think the pressure to be an artist is a lot harder now than it ever used to be. And a really great way around that is getting cosigns by other artists.
Yeah.
You know, like who needs a major and who needs to be like, you know, the most streamed artist ever when you could like, you know, work with another artist, get a cosign from another artist, tour with that artist and develop a career that way.
So. Yeah. And develop your core fans that love you. Like you said, there could be 1,000 of them. You could have 1 million streams, but if you have 1,000 real fans, that's way more beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess it's just like a different thing. I would definitely, I would hope that there would be a better, support system for artists these days, but I know that people don't really value artists. Even though they love to make money off of artists, they don't seem to think that we deserve to make the money. So
definitely in America, it seems like.
So weird.
Yeah.
It's a very weird system.
Because everyone respects it and loves it so much and idolizes it.
And they make so much money off of it.
And make so much money,
off live shows and off the like, you know, streams and off the radio play and all of that. Like there's so many industries that are reliant on the content that artists make. And then we're just sitting here like, cool, thanks for the 0.00001%.
Right. And then they're like, look at this crazy AI thing, actually. We don't need you guys. Thanks.
So weird, but AI, I don't know. We'll see about AI.
I think, obviously it's out of our control somewhat, but it's like, I mean, it's growing very fast, and I think it has some cool elements and has some horrible elements, and just like everything, but depends how people will use it.
Yeah, I think like using it as a tool to help you create, it's fine. Assuming that it will create for you and like become its own artist is a very weird reality that I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, it might. And if it does, I'll get into the food industry.
Sounds good.
I will become a chef.
Really? Do you cook a lot?
Yeah, I love cooking and really? I'm a big foodie. Oh, okay. I just went to a really, I don't even know if I should shout it out because it's like already so popular right now.
Oh God, what is it?
It's this like Korean noodle spot. In Koreatown called The Pong. It's like P-P-O-N-G. And I found it on an Instagram reel and they make their own noodles like in-house every morning. Oh my God. It was insanely good.
And
some girl posted a reel about it over the weekend and like in the last few days it's blown up. And the guy, he's so funny. I was eating there last night and he's like, we're so sorry. We ran out of things. I don't know what's going on. This business just got really busy all of a sudden. I'm like, you have no idea why.
You're like, you're on Instagram. He's like, real.
And I showed him and he's like, I'm going to send her a complaint. You know,
send her a complaint.
Yeah. And he's like, no.
He's like, we were doing fine.
Yeah. He's like, I can't keep up with this right now.
That's so funny. You're like, you're ruining the business. Oh my God. Oh, I got to try that. It sounds amazing.
Oh,
I love
really
food
good.
Too. And I got my sister and my sister-in-law are both chefs. So I'm constantly getting to eat good things.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. They've made their way in the food world. And actually my sister-in-law and my brother are in Taiwan now and going to Vietnam, and we have this like photo stream. And so every night I'm seeing every single thing they're eating, and it's like kind of what you're
describing. That's so awesome. Oh, yeah. Amazing. I'm a big foodie. So yeah, that place is really
food
good.
Food and music go together a lot. You know, I think that's a big connection.
There is. Yeah. I've noticed as well. There's a couple DJs that have started their own like cooking shows.
I know. Doesn't Claptone do something too?
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow.
With the mask on, he's like cooking it, like not talking.
That's so funny.
Something. Or no, I think he does talk. I don't know. I definitely saw some sort of video of him cooking with the mask on.
Yeah, I know Tennis does it too.
Yeah. What do you like to cook?
I actually really love cooking Asian food.
Okay, nice.
It's just like fun because there's so many sauces and you can just like, it's like a potion. It's
probably like infinite amount of things you can do.
Yeah, and I like making sushi at home and like Thai noodles and I don't know. There's just a lot you can do.
Yeah.
You know, the recipes are endless. And yeah, I do enjoy cooking. So if AI takes my job, it won't be able to take.
AI's not taking food away.
It's not taking food away. No, but I think you can't replace a human. And the human experience is like something that I don't think it could be replicated by robots. I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
I know. I just watched The Matrix again, so
nice.
It speaks to that.
Perfect.
Well, what about, do you have any like advice for people that want to take a similar path as you, or advice to other DJs or producers out there?
You know, I think self-awareness is like a huge component. So being like really receptive to feedback and not being defensive, and you know, those are things that can like help you realign and readjust. And if someone tells you like, hey, you have good music, but maybe you should sign to some like DJ labels, don't be like, no, you know, be like, that's a good point, you know?
Right.
And then just follow like, just kind of follow the path. Don't give up. You know, it's like, it took me 10 years. It usually takes most people 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
It'll seem like some people happen to have success overnight. They've probably been practicing for 10 years.
It's
we don't
true.
Really know, you know?
Very true.
So yeah, all good things take time. It's like any job. Like you could work at a 9-to-5 and start out as an assistant, and in 10 years you'd be having a really great salary and things like that. It's the same thing. So
yeah.
So just stick to it. And like, I think, just be receptive, be aware, and like be mindful of like also your habits, you know, because it is an industry that leans heavily on like substance use and stuff.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Just be very aware of those things because it's not sustainable. So you cannot definitely do that.
That's true. Well, you're very smart. I feel like your approach to everything is thought out but also authentic.
Oh,
and
thanks.
Your passion like shines through. And I think those are all good things. Honestly, it's hard to be very opinionated and knowing what you want out of life, as well as being open-minded and open to hearing other people. I think that's
a balance.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, when I first started with Dirty Bird, they were like, well, no, you can't just like, you have to stick to like a specific thing and then do that. And I'm like, well, no, but like, what if I didn't do that? And I made like a bunch of different genres of music. And like the one through line is like my like punk rock kind of edge to everything.
Yeah.
Like, what if we like reshaped that?
Yeah.
It's like, I understand also, like you got to pick and choose your battles, obviously.
Yes.
But, you know, I think people are starting to come around to being more flexible about like the purism that mm-hmm. used to kind of cover dance music. But yeah, I mean, it's yeah, be balanced about it. Know when to pick and choose your battles and be receptive.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why you're doing well, and we'd love to see it. So everyone give it up for Nala.
Woo!
What's up?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And it's the DJ Spider podcast presented by BeatSource. And thank you. We'll see you somewhere soon.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Bye.
And that was the DJ Spider podcast.